Welcome to Prague Will Find a Way, our progressive rock podcast that we feature all progressive rock all the time. Today we're going to talk about some new releases. We have Tim Taddy back, who helped us on our Cruise to the Edge episode last time. I'm Jay Valade.
Jonathan Block.
And so we're going to jump in.
Let's do it.
A couple new releases that came out, and John and I have been talking about the Yes ones for a long time. So Yes has released, for those of you watching on YouTube, I have it. For those of you listening on other formats, you'll have to bear with us. We have the Close to the Edge Deluxe box set, which just came out. So it is a 5-CD, 1 Blu-ray collection. The first disc is the original album remastered. Second disc is Steve Wilson's remix from 2025. He did one in 2014 or 13, something like that. And then instrumental versions by Steve Wilson. Then we have a rarities, which they've kind of collected all the rarities that we've already heard.
Odds and sods.
There's nothing here that's too new, except they've unearthed the dry mix of America, which originally appeared on the New Age of Atlantic sampler back in 1972, which everybody's been clamoring for. But from what I understand, it's a needle drop that they just
It sounds good. I mean, it's dry mix is a little, essentially they took out whatever reverb they added after the fact, but the keyboards are still drenched in reverb. Bill Bruford's drums are still right in your face like they were on the other version, but it's nice. It's good. It definitely has a little more oomph to it.
There's a couple Steven Wilson mixes of each song of the album, like single forms of Siberian Katru and You and I and Close to the Edge. Then the last two, which are, we haven't talked about this yet, are the Live at the Rainbow from 1972, which was, they performed at the Rainbow two nights. One night they used as the Yes Songs movie.
Yeah.
And one, for all I know, they filmed them both and decided how they were going to do it. But
one for the movie, one for the album.
Yeah, so that's the full concert without the Steve Howe clap or Mood for a Day. The Blu-ray includes Stephen Wilson's Atmos mix, 5.1 stereo remix, instrumental mix of the albums, and then there is the vinyl.
And
as well,
this is
the original album.
It's also available digitally, and at least on Apple Music, the Close to the Edge is the Stephen Wilson remix is an Atmos mix, so you can't listen to the Atmos mix on Apple Music.
So basically, inside you get the four CDs, or five CDs, and then you have the Blu-ray, which sits here. That's how that all works. And then it comes with a book. John and I have been very critical of the previous releases from Rhino of the Yes catalog, where the first one, which was the Yes album, included pictures of Patrick Mraz in the book. And the second one included a song called The Dean, which was not Yes at all. And this one, the book is very good. I mean, it's got pictures we've seen before, but it's got a article by Sid Schwartz called The Time Between the Notes. More pictures.
Nice Mini Moogs Mellotron there. Nice.
The previous inside sleeve with the lyrics written by Roger Dean. Then the explanation of all of the
tunes,
information that's on the piece. And then, you know, some more pictures and information about the live release. So very nice overall.
That's
from a packaging standpoint.
But we do not get the inside in it the state that it was. We get this that says Close to the Edge on it.
Well,
you would have to take everything off, and it's still got all the stuff that's glued there to hold them.
Correct.
Right?
So you don't get the inner sleeve.
You do not get the inner sleeve.
Pristine.
Okay.
The way it was.
Now, though, So you would be more familiar with the original pressings and everything. These colors look slightly off to me, at least for the U.S. pressing. I don't.
They're a little extra blue.
Okay. All right.
More cyan.
Okay.
You know? Tim would know. He's our printer.
Yeah.
And I have those posters in my bedroom.
Okay. Yeah. So,
but the front cover with the...
I ding the packaging a point on that.
Yeah. Okay. The front.
The front's
it's
beautiful.
Back to the kind of...
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that
cover. The different thing on the lettering and the whole thing that the original one had. Now, my big takeaway, minus points, is that, you know, the previous packages that they put out when they do these deluxe things had a book that had all the single covers. It had all these different things that they don't have in this. You would think that they would kind of...
Is there an LP in here?
There is. But it's just the regular Atlantic.
But it's great. Yeah, and that's great.
It's the Atlantic.
Rhino's got to do one of those heavyweight.
Allegedly.
They better, because now we don't get the inside of the cover, so I want it.
Everyone who listens to this that I've read online says this pressing is fantastic.
Oh, okay.
It's gotten a very good review.
Okay. So right? You get,
however,
buy an old Yes close to the edge and put the album in it.
My turntable is not like high fidelity. It's just it's fine. So I wouldn't be able to really.
You do have a brilliant anti-static mat though that I think a lot of people would not have.
So the big thing that has
did
come
you
up.
Did you buy that or did it? I'm just curious. I know this is an aside. Did that come with something or did you?
I bought it at the last Marillion. Excuse me. The last Marillion weekend.
Oh, so that was like a special.
Yeah, it was at the merch stand at the weekend in Montreal back in 2023. Wow. So that's where I bought that.
Okay.
They probably had it online, but that was that. So the thing that has come up since, and I don't know if you've read any of this, but a lot of people are saying that they probably got the tapes for the Rainbow show from Steve Howe. And whatever tape thing that they had said the Rainbow and whatever. But people have claimed that some of the songs are the songs from Yes Songs.
Oh,
which I've heard that
could very well be
right. That this was like a compilation because there is time between the songs. Each song is separated.
I know somebody took Roundabout.
Well, they said it about. They
essentially were able to line everything up.
Yes,
and they did that with Heart of the Sunrise.
Is that saying, bad?
They were saying it was Heart of the Sunrise from North Carolina show or something like that. And then, you know, it's like. I don't.
There's a gray area.
There is a gray area.
Supposed to be the Rainbow, which I'm saying,
but
it might not
be.
Okay.
But I don't think there's been any official.
Somebody lined it up. Somebody lined up Yes Songs, and you know, basically
Yes Songs, the vinyl.
Okay.
Yeah. Not even the movie, because the movie was from the Rainbow. The vinyl is from.
So were people expecting that it was going to be the other?
The other night, and it would be a totally different show. And now people are like, I've heard this before. This is the exact same as the...
I've heard it in way better sound quality because the sound quality
It's a different mix.
It's a different mix. Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know, but
you'd probably have to break it down musically with the time.
The time and, you know, the way that certain phrasing goes.
Well, that's
what I
mean.
Or even John Anderson's incidental... things that he does, but I don't know if he did the same thing every night.
I mean,
but
whatever they discover is not going to make a damn bit of difference because they're not going to repress it.
The only difference is going to be, do I buy it again at Record Store Day if it's the same?
Good point.
Am I going to spend for a triple album on Record
because
Store
you know
Day for something
that.
That
it's that.
I already
whatever's
got.
On that. Okay.
Well, they're not going to change it because they think it's
okay.
That thing.
So
it's not
that
like they have another one
so,
sitting in the back.
A domino effect. So thus, if it the Yes boot is not the true thing, does that mean you don't care about Record Store Day then? Is that the only thing? No, I'm trying. Is what that your?
I don't know. It would be everything. That would be my primary thing,
right?
But I got it.
But we looked through the list on the last show, a couple of shows ago. I don't remember you pointing out that anything else you wanted.
That would be what I want.
Okay,
right. But I still might get it just to have it as
I just want to get it so I can see if they shove all three into just the one sleeve like they did back in, in the
70s, in the day.
Back boot days for the 78, like the 78 show we talked about. Anyways, we're getting far afield enough with yes. We
give yes a
lot of bandwidth here.
The other thing that I got in the mail, the other thing that actually
came
up,
you, Steve,
back on the Yes thing, John Anderson and the Bangles released their live album this week.
Perpetual Change.
I did not get that yet. It got delayed by Amazon. I'm not sure why, but I should have that on Monday.
Okay.
So I can't speak to that because my time has been spent listening to the new Stephen Wilson album, The Overview, which I got in the mail yesterday, but I have not opened yet. Because I knew you guys were coming over.
We are blessed.
So I'm doing a unboxing video here.
Have you listened to it, though?
Oh, I've listened to it on Spotify.
Okay, I've listened to it two times, I think.
So as I'm unpacking, what are the thoughts?
We have to wait for the unpack.
All right.
Like, why unpack it if we're not sitting here with bated breath? Because I am, now that I'm familiar with the album, I am actually curious of what is on this thing.
Okay.
So I'm seeing an indentation on the back there. That disturbs me.
Oh, this. Yeah, because it was the packaging. No, this.
Yeah, true.
Is that part of it?
No, it came with the package.
It's dented.
It's dented.
Oh, I'm the tin sitting out there with the print. Oh, is that like...
This was the package came through the mail with a big gash in it.
All right.
Yeah, that,
but is this binding. Part of the design here?
Yes.
The Stardust or something?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a bummer.
That is a bummer.
Yeah, the case binding.
But I got it from Burning Shed, and I'm not going to go.
Oh, okay. All right.
So.
Sorry, Burning Shed.
Yep. It's not their fault. It came in the mail.
Of course, it went over the ocean.
Yes. CD1 is the Overview album, which is two songs, Objects Outlive Us and The Overview.
Okay.
CD2 is the Alter View, Stephen Wilson, which is Orchestral Objects, Beautiful Infinity, Unused Objects, No Ghost on the Moor, Alternate Version, and Permanence Extended Version. So it's like a whole different version of the songs.
It's funny because Permanence almost seemed like an extended version as it is. Because isn't that the last song?
It sounds like it's ended,
but it hasn't. So I find that's interesting.
And then the Blu-ray is 6 audio streams of The Overview. Stereo, 5.1, Atmos, Instrumental, 5.1, Instrumental, Dolby. And then high resolution stereo of... The Alter View with bonus material plus 5.1 Atmos of Orchestral Objects.
Are the two tracks indexed? The CDs, are they indexed with those individual tracks? Or are they
The
only reason I say that is because if anyone has looked at the digital versions, you're essentially getting a double album on that streaming where you get the full piece of each of those without indexes, and then you get a version where
directly after
it does have the indexes.
And,
so,
and if I might, Stephen wanted this when he built this to be just two sides.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
One side, like a Tales from Topographical Oceans.
There's no all.
Is there vinyl involved here? Is there a vinyl here?
No.
There is a version that has vinyl. No. I just got this one because the vinyl was sold out already by the time I actually looked at it.
Was there
anything special
about
it? The vinyl was so much more expensive.
Really? Was it a double album or a single?
It was a single. Single song on each side.
Was it blue vinyl?
I don't know. It was already sold out, so I didn't pay any attention.
For something, anyways.
Well, but again, the idea was that back in the day, there was only 20 minutes to decide.
Yeah. Right? Unless you were Todd Rundgren. Then there was like...
So I'm going to open this up now.
Okay.
We have our three discs.
Okay. Regional. That's a big ass book.
And then we have
pardon my French.
Giant book.
Wow. Mm. Very artsy.
Is this part of the moviescape?
I don't know. Yeah. I'm opening it for the first time.
So a lot of very few words, lots of images.
And the lyrics. I guess some of it folds out.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. Oh, interesting.
So it's...
Oh, is this some of the spoken word part?
Yeah. Yes. It's,
I
almost recited it because, yes.
I'm going to hold my breath until we actually talk about our feelings about, yes, something about clusters.
Yes.
Ganymede.
Yeah.
So there you go. I will...
Very nice package.
It's a very nice package. I will have to, you know, delve deeper into it. This is a little odd. I've got a little anomaly on my...
Yeah, the inset.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't.
And my CD.
They should have glued it.
Yep.
Well, so you got that.
Well, they didn't hire me for that job.
Yeah, they did not.
Only Motley Crue does. You know?
It's off-centered.
It's just slightly off-centered.
Yep. Well, that and a nice ding on the
ding case, from the shipping.
On the case-bound book here. It's, you get some 3D glitches.
So that's the orchestral one?
That is the altar view, yes.
There. You're going to have to figure that out.
I will have to figure it out. And
they put the inside front cover instead of back cover. That's interesting, right?
I will figure that out later.
Why not musically? You want to hear about the music?
At the back?
What?
We've all listened to it, right? Oh, good. There's info.
So there is info.
That's good.
And it tells you who's on it.
Excellent.
So Randy McStein.
Yep.
Stephen Wilson's wife, Rotem.
Yep.
Adam Holtzman. Greg Blundell. I'm looking for Theo Travis.
Theo's on there.
I knew that. I knew when I heard the saxophone. Yeah. I said, of course, it's got to be Theo Travis.
Andy Partridge did some lyrics on the first side.
He wrote a bunch of this.
Huh. Side A.
Willow Beggs is
of the Begg sisters.
Of the Begg sisters. So there you go.
Wow.
That is our new and I got a postcard.
Oh, it came with it?
Came with it.
Well, you got two.
Who are you gonna send it to?
The other postcard. Sending it out into the ethos, to
Ganymede,
to the other view. Yeah, I have to figure out how to get the CD back in.
Do we want to talk about the inspiration for this?
What is the inspiration?
The inspiration is the overview effect. Is the when people go out into space and they look back at Earth, it's called the overview effect. And some people, and it's how it affects you emotionally. Right. And it's either you have this I'm so insignificant and you get really sad, or the world and the universe is so enormous and gigantic, what a wonderful thing. And so it's this, that's what the whole thing is. So he saw some film or something about the overview effect and said, I could write about that.
Yeah, he started researching it, and then he met these astrophysicists, and he's had these meet and greet situations where you go to these studios and watch this. But what he found was, again, what Jay was suggesting, is that there are people like William Shatner went off as a private citizen, was able to afford to go into space, and he wept because he thought, how insignificant are we as human beings in this crazy universe that just is... It's just there. We're a speck.
So he was sad.
Yeah, and depressed.
Yeah, because, well, I don't know. My William Shatner.
His age, mate.
My William Shatner image is that he thinks a lot of himself and it kind of shattered his reality.
His age might play into his reaction.
You brought outer space to all of us. Come on. And now you got
his age.
And now you had to go in.
Played into that.
Like, I expected more. That's what he said.
Really? I expected more from a Stephen Wilson album.
That's right.
Maybe he'll rethink it when he listens to the album.
Well, he could have done the narration.
Yeah. But apparently there were events where Stephen attended with some of these astrophysicists where there were bands and musicians playing to these presentations at planetariums and things.
Oh, okay.
So you're learning about, astrophysics and you're learning about our universe, two different pieces of music.
Got it.
And so this is...
That was the inspiration.
And he, nice. Yeah.
Huh. So, I can't wait to jump in and get a little deeper in there.
All right. I've listened
What's your
to
thought?
It.
And
I've listened to it the whole thing twice, both. So I guess it's really four times because I've listened to both the non-index version. Not that it matters because
they're the same thing, right?
I like is it side A, side B, or side one, side two?
Side one. Let's call it side one.
Okay. Side one. Side
so two. I prefer side two over side one, although the narration is a bit, it's Vangelis-y, you know. And because it's about the same stuff.
Which we all know he loves.
Yeah, we know, and that's fine. Yeah. And it's at the beginning and the end. I think the song is a little more... Look, I mean, today's Prague is different than Prague of yesterday. There's an ethos or a sound around it, which he helped to create, that continues to this day. So one of the reasons why I think I like side two better is just a little more, you know, I'm always looking for just a little more aggressiveness in my Prague. You know what I mean? And side two, I think it just has a little more oomph, where side one is very atmospheric. And there are parts in there. I'm not saying there's not parts, but... Side one reminds me a lot of other Prague I hear, only in the sense, but listening to it and saying, oh, if this was a 5-minute song, I mean, obviously as a long piece. And I will say that they both hold together very well as individual pieces
of music.
Totally. There's no point in them where I'm like, oh, this is too long, or, oh, they shoehorn this in. They work very well as independent pieces. But I never thought as I was listening to them, like, oh, wow, great 20-minute Prague, you know, things.
Correct.
Which is okay.
It is okay.
For me, that's okay.
Because I'm in the same boat as you. But I think that some of those albums that I feel are kind of, I don't know, not mellow, but kind of not grabbing me. There's not a ton of hooks. I get into over the course of time.
That's a fair. Much, that's fair.
Much that's better fair. Than some of the ones that have these hooks that I'm like, eh, I can skip that one. I can skip that one because the hook's already there and I already know it and I've still got 5 minutes left of that.
Right.
Some of those other things. I mean, we were talking earlier about Brian Ferry very briefly, and some of Brian Ferry's stuff I listened to and I'm like, ugh, it's another Brian Ferry album that's the same. And then I listened to it like over the course of time, and then 2 years later, I'll pull it out again. I'm like, what a fantastic album.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because you've listened to it and you kind of get the subtleties, and those subtleties make it that much better that I have to give it time. Because I've been listening in the car or when I'm on a walk or whatever over the past 2 days, right? Because it just came out on Friday.
Yeah.
So I haven't really sat down. And, you know, once I can sit down.
Even if you have it in the bathroom. The other room. So when, you know, it's been on.
Yeah.
There are parts all of a sudden that come out. And they're not, again, it's not like they're shoehorned in or jarring. It's like the natural progression of it. I feel that a lot. Maybe it's more the first one I have to listen to more. It's a little, it's just different. So maybe it's deeper. But the second one, there's just something... worked right from the first listen.
And sometimes with the prog stuff, especially when it is a 20 minute long piece, you can't just sit there and expect to just automatically be like, best thing ever. I can't believe it.
But even if you never get to that, but like I thought, I'm like, even if I don't like this or listen to it again, I said, it's to me, it's still an achievement that I listen to these 20-minute pieces. I don't feel like they're that long.
Oh, I don't either.
I don't either.
That's true.
So
at all.
What do you think, Tim?
So, huge fan, obviously. And I felt on the first go-through, again, and this is one of those records that's very approachable. It's not as heavy as some of his more prog stuff that he did in the past.
Right.
Which
is
spectacular.
Right. It's no Raven.
It's no Vermilion Core either. So the bottom line is that
it's different.
It's completely different. And again, he's the first guy on the planet that will never use the P word. And he makes sure that at every interview he says, let's not say Prague.
Although on this one he does.
He does. But
the one that is just because of the length of the song makes it Prague?
Yeah, because it's a single side of a vinyl.
And then that was part of it, too. Yes. It's like...
Anything over 6 minutes is starting to get into a Prague-y feel. And there's a, everybody wanted to give him a hard time. I know I'm not answering your question, but everybody wants to give him a hard time about no singles and, you know, you didn't release it. People that listen to Stephen Wilson's music don't need a single. Yeah. They want to hear his music.
He's also been down that road before. Yeah, it's not where he's tried the singles. And I mean, even though he has some songs that if he had a different aesthetic, he might be, his songs might get on the radio.
Right, but even people that do singles, it's like I think about Peter Gabriel with all the singles that came up before. No one cares.
Nobody cares.
No, I mean, people care that are Peter Gabriel fans and that want to buy the album. And it's
right,
like, oh, great, another
culture
week.
Is not going to jump
like,
into it.
Oh, okay, new Peter Gabriel is saying, oh, tomorrow will be top 15 right. or something like that. Yeah. You know, but for Peter Gabriel fans,
right.
it's great.
Yes.
And as soon as
we are talking about people who are not 25 years old.
Correct. And as soon as
you know, I mean, who are making popular music singles and all that stuff.
Right.
It's not going to show
the,
up on.
What are the audiences at a Stephen Wilson show like demographically? Is there young people?
Or there are younger people.
It's
not like going to a John Lodge show.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, John and I were at a John Lodge show. We actually.
I did a podcast from there. I know exactly what you're talking about. It took me a second.
And we were going to interview people walking in, but they were... of them were significantly older
Jay's
than
like,
us.
Like, aren't we going to stop any of these people? I said, no, absolutely not.
No. 40 to 60.
We're old enough as it is.
Maybe 40 to 60, 40 to 70 is the demographic.
It was, I mean, obviously we'll be there sooner than lots of people, but it was it was not a podcast crowd.
Right. But when you watch like the Netherlands Porcupine Tree show.
Oh, yeah, of course.
There were young people there.
Well, but
I mean, younger.
Right, but that's a different crowd.
You got to finish that before I pour a new beer in there.
Beer will find a way.
If you want
down my throat.
To.
Down my
throat. So what do you think?
So obviously from the
so far,
beginning of the record,
kick my ass for
from,
sure.
From
maybe
the
Jay's.
Beginning of the sorry, record, you automatically know this is a Stephen Wilson record. There's an initial narrative that comes in. There's a whole, but what was really intriguing for me for the first maybe 6 or 7 minutes, it's almost Beatlesque. Like it's like a it's more like a ballad. There's some 4/4 work in there. It's very casual.
I think that's that Andy Partridge moment because Andy Partridge from XTC is writing these lyrics
exactly,
and there's a little bit more of his kind of storytelling.
That's right,
which is probably why Stephen asked him to do it.
Yes. And he,
you know, if you ask Andy Partridge to do something, you know what you're going to get.
Yeah, and he uses Andy's life for the movie that he's been working on right now.
Interesting.
Yeah, that because he's like, you know.
Have they worked together before?
Yes.
Stephen remixed and remastered all of the XTC catalog.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
He and Andy worked together on that stuff. So I think that they have a mutual respect for
each
other.
If he could get together, everybody that Stephen Wilson's worked with, we'd have...
We'd have another whiteboard.
We'd have Ian Anderson on foot. I mean,
that's a whole new
huge,
tree.
Huge, big prog supergroup.
And Stephen really
We Are the World.
Yeah, and Stephen kind of feels like Andy Partridge. Basically, is the guy the guy out there that really does the best at writing music and composing music about just everyday life. People.
The everyday story of small town.
Yeah.
Has he ever done a cruise, Stephen?
Well, I don't think so.
No.
See,
his band members have.
The other thing, the funny thing is,
he's afraid of boats, I guess.
The other thing I was thinking of, just to go back to the cruise.
By the way, the reason why he probably doesn't do the cruise is because you don't want to be on a boat barefoot.
Oh, yeah.
Inside joke, but yeah, right? He has to play barefoot.
So my new theory is one of the reasons why they got Fripp on the cruise is now when, like, they go to Stephen Wilson, like, why would I play a cruise? And they're like, look, we got Robert Fripp
to go.
Okay, I mean, what's anybody? He can't.
My chopper.
Yeah, yeah. And they're, you can't say no at that. Yeah. I'm never gonna stop this.
Well, wait. Let's stay on the Fripp vein because Randy McStein on this record is his guitar work is brilliant, and there is a There's a very elongated solo that he does that's Frippatronics.
Yes, yes. Persona, I agree. Yep, yep.
It's almost comfortably numb. It just keeps going and going.
Is this the touring band, the same band that you played with him?
Yes.
Randy was in the Porcupine Tree Band when they toured. Okay. So who's in the band now for him touring?
For this tour record? It will be essentially the players that recorded it with him. Craig Blundell on drums, Adam Holzman on keys.
Yeah.
It's your basic.
Who's playing bass?
And Randy. Nick Bangs.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. Because Nick's not on the album.
No, but it's Nick. Yeah.
Because Steven plays bass on the album.
He's got Sir Nick. I know Steven plays his own bass, but Sir Nick Beggs, Craig, Adam. Oh, he should be knighted.
Oh, boy. He would, but too shy.
Are you going to see him? Are you seeing him? Okay. Yeah. Same place Jay is?
Yeah.
Porchester.
Okay. Yeah.
It's going to be fabulous.
The Capitol?
At the Capitol.
Interesting.
And small venue for him.
And it's going to be an experience because a lot of the things we just saw in that box set there
will become
a
multimedia. It's going to be a multimedia
event. They'll probably have.
Are there going to be misaligned CD things?
Yeah.
And a big giant gash in the back?
There'll be a gash in the screen itself.
It's more of an indentation.
There'll be a void in the screen. It's called debossing. You've got to deboss. You can sell that and make money. Because it's debossed.
Bring it with you.
That is debossed. Like,
bring it with you. And you're going to have Steven sign it today. What was going to have you sign this side, but you know,
there's a big
valley here.
But maybe we'll see excerpts from the movie.
Do you have any hair you can exchange for me? In the back.
That's a good one.
You know,
excuse me.
Merch table.
We'll have to, you know, hashtag burning shed.
I know, yeah. Well,
they won't be in attendance. Their merch people will not be there. From the UK.
Yeah. Hmm.
Just before I forget, because totally unrelated, but the way that John and the Band Geeks are playing two nights at Richfield, am I dreaming this? Or I think Steve Hackett is doing the same thing.
He is.
What is going on?
No, but Steve Hackett is doing two nights in a row. John has a day off in the middle.
Why? Is there so much audience up there?
What I want is for John to, or somebody from the band to, on that day off in between, be like, what are we doing all day? And I'm like, well, Prague will find a way.
I mean, we had John Davis. You want that to be the last word on yes,
yeah,
Mr. Anderson?
Yeah. The other John?
We didn't even have to talk about Yes. I could spend an hour talking about animation with him.
Right. But that's interesting because I think that there's a contingent because the Ridgefield Playhouse has, you know, there's owners.
Yeah.
And there's
I don't understand.
And the owners kind of just put money up because this is what they want. And so if
somebody must be a big Yes fan there. Because Rick plays there.
Yeah, but and that I get. But two nights, they're going to be able to do two. Originally,
look at tickets right now.
So I thought with John Anderson, because there was a day in between, maybe they were videoing. Like, that would make sense. And then you figure out, on the day off, the crew would figure out which songs you got to do again.
That's a good point. What if...
But now Stephen... Oh, but Stephen...
Hackett could do the same thing.
Could do the same thing.
So maybe the first night's kind of a dress rehearsal for the second night.
This is pure conjecture. Pure
speculation.
Well, that's why before every... sentence we're saying maybe, like maybe Richfield Playhouse offers this recording service or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay, so I don't care about any of that. I just wanted to make sure I was not dreaming. But Steve Hackett is actually playing.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that as well.
Just a reminder, this is Connecticut. Okay?
He just announced this new tour.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, maybe he'll come back to town here.
Isn't it funny to think, like, if this was 1972 and Genesis was coming, that's where they would be playing. They would be playing the Richfield Playhouse.
Right.
I mean, they played, like, the Palace Theater in Waterbury or something, you know? So Crimson, too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of wild. Then again, you know, we saw Crimson at small places.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I don't know if they ever broke through.
I'm sorry. Back to Stephen Wilson. I think that it now.
We got to give it a chance and see what happens.
We're all positive.
Yes.
So,
again, there's a lot of recognizable riffs, and the megaphone.
There are things that suddenly, the slide guitar. Something starts, and I'm like, oh, this kind of reminds me of something else.
Oh, you mean of his past? He kind of has these things.
They're a little.
I was not familiar with him.
It's so not trains, but there was some song on there that I was like, oh, there's this acoustic guitar going, and I'm like, I can't remember what part it was.
That's neat. Good album.
I like it.
Yeah, but, you know, again,
it just came out yesterday.
The narrative side of it, to me, could have been compressed a little bit.
Particularly on side two.
Yeah.
Well, I think that is where the narrative
is. Yeah, that is where it is.
Yeah. Is there a record store day tie into any of that?
Nothing.
Here? Even over there?
Oh, I don't know.
I would think you could put the orchestral out.
Because, you know, to the bone...
Are you listening, Mr. Wilson?
You know, the narrative on To the Bone was on purpose, you know, and then even had Elton John do a version of it.
Yes.
And
we did want to talk even briefly about Dream Theater, because Jay and I are not as familiar with them as you are. And a lot's happened in the last year since you've been here. So I know you've seen them. We just wanted to get your perspective on the return to the classic. Well, Mike Portnoy's back, and that's the whole thing.
Yes. Right?
Right.
So he left when?
15 years ago.
It seems like yesterday.
He put out a lot of music in those 15 years. That's right.
Yeah, he played... Maybe on 60 different records.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. Was he in Transatlantic? He was at the same time as Dream Theater. And then, right? They were overlapped.
There was overlap.
There was an overlap with Transatlantic.
Wasn't it like 97 when they started or something? I thought it was the late 90s.
Yeah, I thought it was.
I could be wrong.
Yeah. Some of these things that I love that are peripheral to my... that I just listen to all the time, I don't... remember the dates on any of them.
It's crazy, you know, the evolution of Dream Theater. But so he leaves a band, and you know about the auditions.
Yep.
And Mike Mangini gets the gig, and that year they put out Dramatic Turn of Events, because they were working on music. Mike wanted to take a hiatus from that to go on tour with Avenged Sevenfold. Spread his wings a little bit. And they're like, no, this is our process. We toured, now we record, and then we...
I never made the connection between that title when there was upheaval in the band and Drama by Yes, which was also the same sort of
idea. Drama was a band.
Right. And then, of course, you had
a band called Drama with those.
And then you had Open Your Eyes.
Yeah.
So, right.
Sorry, go on.
So, Mangini era, fabulous. It put out a lot of great records. They're just consummate virtuosos.
And you continue to see them. You didn't get off the bus because Mike had exited.
No.
Okay.
No, because you've got this core of musicians that, in and of themselves, in their line of work, if you will, there's no keyboard player better than Jordan Rudess. You can say Rick Wakeman in his heyday, or Keith Emerson or something, but today...
They're all different, too.
Today, this guy can do Tarkus with his eyes closed, and he can do... So it doesn't matter, and he has done those things, and... You know, Juilliard trained all that. I'll go off the rails here, but you have got John Petrucci, guitarist that can do anything. We've gone to shows.
Six strings are not enough for that man. No. He needs seven.
Seven and eight now.
Or eight. Yeah. Wow, eight.
Eight, yeah. Johnny Myung on bass, just watching him Friday night, having sat on that side of the stage, it just...
And you can hear him. Isn't that one of the complaints over the years that he's mixed low or...
Yeah, not anymore.
Okay, good. Good.
Fellow bass player. He's just super, super tight. These guys practice.
Giving props to the bass.
Yes.
And the best thing that, you know, that has happened in the last year and a half is that Mike Portnoy comes back to the band. It's their 40th anniversary as a band.
Okay.
Having been Majesty at Berkeley 40 years ago. That was the name of the band back then. And they released this new album that really, from stem to stern, I'm going to use that again, is classic Dream Theater. There's a lot of hooks. There's a lot of repetitive riffs and things that you've heard before that they've changed slightly, but it just brings you back to the core of what their music was all about back, you know, when Six Degrees of, you know,
yeah.
Turbulence.
Inner Turbulence and... And
I don't know why I know this.
Scenes from Memory. And,
yeah, no, know, is that a lot of, which is the one with Derek Sherinian on?
Well, Derek...
He was on with them, Falling Into Infinity?
Falling Into Infinity. And that was it.
Just like, I don't know. Well, I actually listened to that, Al. I did listen to that.
And that was kind of, that was another turning point because Liquid...
I like him as a keyboardist.
Because Liquid Tension Experiment was doing their thing with Tony Levin. So three, you know, Big Dream Theater with Tony Levin. Yeah. And so... And Jordan Rudess, and it's like, wait a second, this guy's a lot better than this guy, and this guy's single, and this guy's married, and so Derek goes one way, they get, and so that's
they,
when
they wanted Jordan for years, didn't they? Yeah, that was always the impression.
And he wasn't leaving Dixie Dregs, so
no, because I saw him with Dixie Dregs, and he used to have a column in Keyboard Magazine and all this stuff, and then all of a sudden it was like
we saw him solo opening for Blackfield another Blackfield.
Wow. And then we saw him with Rod Morgenstern too, so you know, opening for Porcupine Tree. So this past year, Dream Theater put together a brand new album. They also went on tour. They started at O2 Arena, sold it out in London, sold out probably 15 venues in Europe, worked their way into South America, took a break during the holidays, came back, did a U.S. tour starting February 7.
And you've seen them already?
Yes.
Okay, where did you see them?
So I just saw them 2 nights ago
at
Dale Theater.
Okay.
So, and they're, so the tour.
Wallingford, Connecticut.
Yeah,
so were they one night there or were they 2 nights?
No, 1 night.
Okay. Cause we were up there last night and we're like, somebody's playing at the Oakdale.
Yeah.
But there were a ton of cars out there.
No, they were in Boston last night.
Okay.
So they.
No opening act just then?
Yeah.
They play a full show, 2 sets. What do they do?
They play 2 sets. Okay. Every night, notoriously, they come on right at 7:30. They play 2 full sets and then encore. So they play for 3.5 hours.
Wow.
And it's a,
so they're done by 11.
We're out of there at 10:50.
Okay.
Yeah. Every night.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they're like
crazy but good. And I have to say, I like the venues and the bands sticking to a schedule.
Yes.
Gone are the days when you would arrive and you just sit there waiting and waiting and waiting.
Well, these guys at Gramercy Theater, they were just lollygagging.
The Aristocrats?
Yeah, a few weeks ago.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to do that at the warehouse.
No, you're not doing that at the warehouse. You're not doing that on the ship.
No.
But so, in any event, the first part of the tour was just this... really well put together set list for the masses because Mike Portnoy was back in the band.
Right. Yeah. And so we're going to play all these songs.
And the set list is
really, it stuff they had not played in the 15 years or just stuff that he was instrumental in writing or performing?
It's interesting. A lot of it because of 12 or 13 tours in between
albums.
Mike Mangini had to play a lot of that
stuff. Of course,
stuff.
Yeah.
But they put this set together specifically with, they had to touch on all the albums right from the beginning.
Got it.
And knowing them all in sequence doesn't matter to you guys. Like on this tour for the European and South American side of it, they had the exact same set list, which is typically un-Mike Portnoy-like because he would always mix it up. And not only for spontaneity, but for the fans that are going to move from one city to another to watch the band. And I'll bring up an example of that very quickly. But on February 7th, now they have a new album that had just been released the 2 weeks prior. And so they dropped in Night Terror, which is the first single off of the new album, Parasomnia, which is all about sleep disorders. And then a couple weeks later, they've now introduced a second single off of there called Midnight Messiah. And so now we're starting to see some of the new songs.
So there,
are they about. Are they they're dropping other tunes to accommodate those?
They have to. Okay. Yeah.
And are you bummed about what they're dropping or no?
No.
Okay.
No. Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Good, no, good.
He's seen them 1 million times.
909,000.
When I turned 60, James LeBrie sent me a video.
Oh, nice. Okay. All right.
Which was really cool. My kids put him up to it.
Yeah.
But it was like, he said something like, "I am surprised you've seen us maybe more times than I've seen us."
That's good. Okay, anyway, so you know
that. I'm a groupie. Good. Anyway, in any event, again, my son Marco, who goes to every one of these shows for the last maybe 25 years, since he's 12, he's seen Dream Theater. He hasn't been to every show I've been to, but he will say, we go see 70, 80, 90 concerts a year because we're seeing 40 to 50 on the cruise to the edge. Yeah. And then you go see Dream Theater and you're like, okay, you know, these were all great shows, but then you've got these guys that just everything they're doing at every moment in time is incredible. And it
just love them.
So it's just a different level of band.
But there's an attention factor that I don't get jacked up to go to see them because they don't want to be disappointed.
Right.
And, you know, invariably at the end of the show, I wasn't disappointed. There was one record with Mangini called The Astonishing, which was less than astonishing.
Astonishing.
It was absolutely horrific.
Was that the tour when they just played the album?
Yeah.
And nothing else? Yeah, I remember that because a friend of mine, somebody who worked for me at the time was really into Dream Theater. And I remember when that happened and I was like, you know, he's taking his father to the show and I was like, and then he told me, he goes, yeah, they're just playing it. And he goes, that's okay. Cause I've seen him a lot of times, but when he came back, he was like, it was good, but it definitely could have been better.
And so in a nutshell, when Portnoy came back, he said, no more click tracks when we play live, and no more overdubs. You have to work with your own instrument. That's it.
You get what you get.
You bring what you bring. They made everybody shut their phones off and things like that, but it's still stellar.
Nice.
And the other thing he did want to do is mix up the set list, but that didn't work out to
much
to
his chagrin.
But they are starting to do that. But the tour ends at Radio City Music Hall next Saturday night. Then they're going to take a break. They've already vowed to come back and play the brand new album in its entirety.
Oh, wow.
Which they've done in the past.
Okay. With,
you know, Six Degrees,
Scenes
from a Memory.
So they've got, this is just,
two sets.
This is just part one.
Yeah.
That's all.
Of the tour.
Exactly.
And so now they're going to come back.
Yeah.
All right.
Celebration of 40 years of Dream Theater. Excellent. Yeah. Well, all right. Prague will find a way.
If you want it to.